タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we have Evelyn Wood joining us to share her love of vintage sewing and refashioning. We chat about what to look for when sourcing vintage patterns and fabric, garment archaeology, and how to see beyond the clothes when hunting for your next refashioning project. Evelyn also shares her top five sewing habits.
How many of them do you do, Helen?
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Hello, Evelyn. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hello. Thank you. It's so great to be here.
We're so happy to have you. Right off the bat, I want to say that it was recommended that we have you on the show from my assistant, who loves you so much and really wanted to hear from you. So we're really glad that she brought you into our lives because we've really enjoyed getting to know you through your YouTube channel. But can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes. Well, my name is Evelyn Wood. I live in Brisbane, Australia, so it is quite far away from most of the rest of the world. And I run a business doing all sorts of sewing things and teaching people how to sew and refashion, and I make YouTube videos. I've just built a life around sewing, vintage, and fashion.
So can you tell us the story of how and when you learned how to sew?
Yes, I learned to sew in high school, actually. In high school, it was still a subject that everybody did, boys, girls, everybody. And we did home economics, and I just loved it. From the first class, I absolutely loved learning to sew, and I did it all through high school. And then, you know, I went on to college to study fashion, but that's where I learned to sew. My mum didn't sew. I didn't have any aunties or grandmothers that sewed or anything like that. That was the only place that I became, you know, aware of this world that even existed.
And you mentioned that you went on to study fashion in college. So can you tell us a little bit about how that came to be?
Yes, as I said, just loved sewing. I got my first sewing machine at 14. That was about a year after a first class in high school of sewing, and just loved it. So I just taught myself, harassed my sewing teachers to teach me more all the time. And it was my absolute like passion, you know, the one thing that I loved the most. I knew that a career in fashion of some kind was definitely going to be for me. So that's when it was just a natural progression for me to go on to study fashion at college. And that's where I really learned pattern making and drafting and more about design and just the industry and all those types of things there.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I would love to hear a little bit more about that journey. So take us through from studying fashion design in college and kind of when your love of vintage clothing began. Kind of take us through that career path for you.
Yes, my love of vintage, I would say, started, well, I've always been interested in vintage. My stepping stone into dressing vintage sort of every day, more what you see now, started a little bit later. But, you know, it was only recently that I actually was flicking back through some of my sewing books and design books from high school in sewing class, where we had our sort of, you know, design inspirations and all of our little miniature portfolios back then. And even in there, I have black and white photographs of, you know, the Christian Dior bar suit and, you know, all these other glamorous 1930s stars. Are all of my inspiration pictures, even back then. And it was so interesting to find that book and look through and just sort of think, you know, you come full circle and you think, well, that makes sense, I guess. And so after I've always been making my own clothes, studied fashion. And then it was about a few years after that that I really started changing my style and, you know, a lot of things about my life. You know, that's when I decided to go into business for myself and just change my life. And my style became very much more just wearing what I really, truly wanted to. I didn't care about what other people were doing, what might have been quote unquote appropriate for different jobs I had at the time or anything, but I really just delve deep into just really dressing for my own pleasure and just these glamorous styles that I wanted to recreate. I just went headfirst into down that road and obviously I've never turned back so far.
Oh, that's awesome. You do have such a fabulous style. I want everyone to pause and go and check out Evelyn's Instagram or her YouTube channel and check out her style because it's amazing. And I wonder what it's like dressing vintage in a modern world. Do you get a lot of comments from people? Are people curious to hear more about your style on your day-to-day basis?
Yes, thank you. That's very sweet of you to say. Yes, I do get a lot of comments. The most interesting thing I think about this, when you start dressing differently, you do notice a lot of people looking at you. And, you know, it does take a bit of adjusting at first. But the thing that I've really noticed the most is that it really brings people so much joy to see you dressing like this. Most people, when they stop me, they just have such smiles and just admiration, and it makes them so happy. It reminds them of their grandmother, or they just have always wanted to dress something like this themselves but never have. And, you know, they're always just so happy, and it's always very joyful. Like, that, you know, all the comments that I really get, anyone that stops me, I have people that want to take like photographs with me in the street because I just love my style. So it's quite surprising just how much joy dressing for yourself in your own way brings other people when just randomly in the street sometimes. That's, I think, the most interesting part of dressing vintage for me.
And do you have a specific decade that you dress from, or do you span lots of different decades?
I would say that I span lots of different decades. I have a general, probably most of, you know, I think due to my hair at this point in time, leads to more of a sort of 30s kind of look, is probably what comes across most of the time these days. But I'm really interested in many different decades, and I love mixing up 20s elements or 30s elements, some of the 40s elements. I love mixing it up all over. You know, I do this for personal style, not to recreate a specific look in history. I'm not, you know, doing a reenactment or anything like that. So I just, you know, go for it and pick whatever I like. And these days I'm even more and more interested in actually older decades, like the teens and Edwardian eras. I'm, you know, being very heavily influenced by at the moment. It's really giving me a lot of inspiration from even looking back further at this point.
Wow, that is awesome. The question that comes to mind for me is, where are you finding all of these amazing clothes? Are you dressing mostly with vintage clothes, or are you sewing a lot of this up yourself? What is that, you know, distribution like in your wardrobe?
Yes, that is quite an interesting question. I started buying different vintage pieces, and that's when I really got into sewing from vintage patterns and sewing in, you know, more authentic techniques and using techniques that they used in vintage garments. To really make what I sew look and feel vintage as well. So the more I go further and further back in time in the decades that I'm interested in dressing like, it's harder and harder to get actual vintage pieces, of course. So there lies a big problem in that a lot of those garments are coming close to 100 years old, in which case, particularly in Australia, they do not exist. You know, you can buy online, of course, but it does present the problem that being 100 years old, those garments are extremely, extremely delicate, and you don't really want to be wearing something like that in your everyday. That's more of a special occasion dress, so to say. So that's actually where restyling thrift store clothes and refashioning kind of really come into my life. Of course, I can make from a vintage pattern and make something up. But the refashioning really came from, even when you make something up, you kind of put a lot of effort into it, and it turns out to be more of your special occasion dresses, you know, as well. So the refashioning was really what I brought into my day-to-day that I would wear all of the time that you can, you know, do the house cleaning in still, and you don't, you're not worried about ripping seams or getting it dirty, or, you know, because it's, I guess, you know, from the thrift store, it doesn't cost you as much. And it's a bit more easily replaceable. So that's when I really sort of started bringing like everyday items, you know, my sleepwear, my everything is sort of vintage styled. That's where my refashioning really kind of filled that gap in my wardrobe.
And you do such an incredible job with your refashioning. We love, you have some awesome videos on your YouTube channel that we'll definitely link in the show notes. And we totally want to touch on that a little bit later. But I want to dive into something that you said about incorporating those vintage sewing techniques into your handmade garments to sort of make them feel more authentic. And I would love if you could share a few examples of some techniques that you might incorporate to achieve that.
Oh, definitely. It's one of the things that make it, for me, it just gives that finishing touch that makes it so much more special. When I first started running my business, the first version was doing a vintage reproduction fashion label. And so I would wanted to reproduce garments, you know, utilizing all these, you know, little vintage techniques in those garments as well to make them really look and feel that I was already incorporating into my own garments. I wanted these to be available to all my clients as well. So things like metal side zips, definitely, you know, having a zip at the back is a fairly telltale modern feature, whereas the side zip is just quintessentially, you know, 1950s and earlier. Things like rayon hem tapes, you know, almost every dress you'll find has, vintage dress that you'll find has, you know, rayon hem tapes and seam tapes around the waist and the hems to finish those off. That was something that I could very easily incorporate into my garments, and using things like open seams to make it look nice and actually more alterable in the future as well. It's not something that's done in modern production, which is something that I ran into in producing those items. But it's I'd say they're sort of the main ones, and using fabrics that were, you know, there's no stretch cottons or anything like that. I'd use, you know, rayons, silks, linens, things that were available that really would keep in feel with vintage garments of the time. So it really does look like a vintage garment. And most people thought that they are vintage garments because of all those, just those little things that finish it off.
Those are great examples. And I also want to know, are you primarily drafting these vintage garments or these patterns from scratch, or are you using vintage patterns, or do you have a good modern source for vintage patterns that you want to share?
Yes, when I start, you know, make a vintage style dress from scratch, I like to use and start with vintage patterns because the fit is so different. You know, the way that the darts point, where they're located, where the waistline sits, the amount of curve, the grain line on it, all the little intricacies that you just can't really replicate. So I definitely always like to start with an actual vintage pattern, and then I will, you know, scale it up or down to my size and make any then style adjustments that I want to recreate from there, but using the vintage patterns as my block patterns basically, and then I design out from there. That's my general always port of call to get that really nice vintage fit and keep it really true and as authentic as I can.
And where do you find all of these wonderful vintage patterns?
Yes, that can be quite difficult. I mean, they are everywhere. Once you start looking, you find that there are so many. I do find some in thrift stores here. Mostly you'll find the more if you go looking for something specific. Definitely places like Etsy and eBay are great places to find those original vintage patterns. And there are a lot of companies that reproduce the vintage patterns as well. So some modernize them, some keep them exactly as are. You know, there are varying degrees of in which they modernize the instructions as well. So it may or may not be for beginners. Definitely original vintage patterns come with very scant instructions. So it is not recommended that a beginner pick up a vintage pattern and expect to be able to sew from it. My experience in the very first vintage pattern that I sewed from was from a women's magazine, the Home Journal, Australian Home Journal. I think it was from 1954, and they come with patterns, as magazines did back then, of course. And I pulled it out. I was so excited. I pulled it out and put all these pattern pieces out and then realized there is nothing written on them at all. And at this point, I've sewn for a very long time, gone to fashion college, and even I had a hard time working out the pieces and how they put together, because the instructions were about a paragraph of text, that's all. And they're sort of put away in a slightly, you know, different manner as well. So you kind of just have to figure it out. And even that was, you know, interesting for me to have to figure out what all the little, you know, holes in the pattern pieces meant and all of that sort of thing, because it is quite different vintage patterns, for sure.
It kind of makes me wonder what people did back then. Like, how did they figure out how to use the pattern?
Well, actually, this is something that I talk about with my students quite a lot, in that a pattern, because people always sort of, you know, ask, like, why is it so difficult? These patterns are so confusing, even modern patterns, like, it's so confusing. And my theory is that dressmaking patterns weren't designed for a beginner sewer to pick up and learn how to sew. They were designed in a time when it was a way for you to get a new style. All the hard part was done for you in the pattern drafting, and you'd get it mail order sent to you, but you already knew how to sew and dressmake. That's what they were designed for, is for the home dressmaker who already had those skills and just would order the pattern. That's what they're designed for. And now we're trying to make it as you can pick it up and learn how to sew, which is just not the case. You already need, like, you need that base knowledge behind you before you can pick up that pattern and understand what is going on in those patterns. So, I mean, it's just that the base level of knowledge of dressmaking was already there. It's just we now think that we can pick one up and learn how to sew from that pattern. I think that's where the biggest misconception is about sewing patterns.
Maybe the advantage for us is that we have the internet and we can Google things and try to figure things out for ourselves. But I'm curious too, what you look for in a vintage pattern to know that it's something that you can actually use and make into a garment.
I just look for this style. I know pattern drafting and grading, so I don't even look at the size of a pattern ever. I can't remember the last time that I did that. It doesn't even come into my thought pattern anymore, which is quite funny. But I just look for the styles that I like, and I know that I can change it up to any size that I need and make any adjustments to the style that I need from there. When, you know, if I have a style in mind, it's always good to start with the basic silhouette. You know, the hard things, like, is the collar closer to what you're looking for? You know, because the skirt might be easy to change, but the collar is a harder thing to make slight adjustments to. Those sorts of things. So, you know, making sure that the big elements that you want there, and the, you know, perhaps the more difficult elements to change, are sort of there on that pattern. And then you only want to be changing the easier things if you can, of course.
Of course. Of course. That makes a lot of sense. And you have me wondering, do you have a large stash of vintage patterns? What does your collection look like?
Oh my gosh. Do I have a stash? Yes. Way too many, of course. And then all my own ones that I've drafted all hang up. I have far too many. I have them all organized on a bookshelf at the moment. So I recently did a little bit of a clear out and got rid of some. The more modern ones, I think I will still clear out as time goes on and just keep my vintage patterns. I think I'll always collect vintage patterns. I love them so much. It's just a beautiful reference to have, along with my vintage sewing books. I love them. I love them for the reference, and for just, you gain so much knowledge of how garments were constructed back then by looking at all those things. So I'm sure that my my stash will definitely continue to grow in time.
I think we can all relate to that.
Right? Yeah.
I think our listeners will probably be wondering if you have some sort of system for cataloging what you have, or do you just have it all out on the bookshelf like you mentioned?
Yeah, I have mine organized in decades. So I start with, I have all my 1920s, and then I would say 20s style patterns, so more modern ones that just could be used for a 20s style sort of look. And then I do have them within those decades. I have them organized into sort of dresses, separates, and, you know, coats, lingerie. So pretty organized, I guess. I like things to be all categorized, and I like to be able to find it. When I'm looking for something, I would usually think, you know, I started with, like, when I'm looking for a pattern, what am I thinking about? I'll know I want to make a 1930s lingerie slip. So I can go to my 1930s section and have a little look in the lingerie. There you go. It's right there.
So since we're talking about stashes, can you tell us a little bit about your fabric collection as well? Do you collect vintage fabrics too?
Oh my gosh, yes. I have so much. I'm someone who likes to have my beautiful things surrounding me. It brings me joy to have these nice things around me in my home. And fabric and dressmaking, equipment, supplies, patterns, fabric all come into that category. So I have so much. If I see beautiful vintage fabric, I have to buy it, because particularly vintage fabric, you can't go looking for it when you need it. You're never going to find it, of course. So being that sewing is my job as well, I can, you know, air quotes, justify having so much of a bigger stash because I need it, of course, on hand all the time.
Of course.
I knew that you guys would understand.
And you briefly touched earlier on the types of fabrics that are appropriate for making sort of vintage style garments. But do you have a favorite fabric to work with? Is there something that you really tend to gravitate towards?
That's a tough one. A favorite fabric. I like all kinds of fabric. It's always nice. You know, beautiful vintage rayons are just delightful. A rayon crepe is definitely one of my favorite fabrics. You know, it comes with challenges, though. It's always slippery and sometimes difficult to work with. But and then you go back to sewing a nice crisp cotton and you think, this is the best fabric ever because it's just a delight to sew with. So no real fabric. I like always just choosing the right fabric for the right design and it just all coming together beautifully.
Yeah, I think we all need those, like, difficult fabrics to work with so that we can truly appreciate the cottons and the wools.
That's right. And it's always good to expand your sewing, you know, repertoire as well. You know, if you don't jump outside of your comfort zone and try different fabrics, you'll only ever be stuck to the, you know, beginner sewing with cotton phase if you never sort of, you know, branch out and try something a little bit slipperier, perhaps.
Absolutely.
One question that we get often in regards to vintage fabrics is, when you see a fabric at the thrift store, how do you know if it's high quality, or how do you know if it's vintage, and how do you know what kind of fabric it is?
Yeah, I think most of my fabrics are from the thrift store these days. For a few years, I haven't really bought any sort of new fabric unless it's been something that I just don't have and need. It is difficult. I'd say understanding what it's made from, I think, just comes with practice. The more that you handle fabrics and sort of actually take note to, when you're at the fabric store, look at the names and look at the fibers as you're touching and feeling everything and really get a feel for it, it just comes with having handled it a lot. And knowing it's vintage, the same sort of thing. You can generally, for me, I would best describe it. So usually got to do with the look of it and, like, the feel and the weight. So if you have anything like a shinier rayon, say, it's got this heaviness to it that modern fabrics do not. The cottons will have just a quality to them that you just haven't seen before. They just are different. And I think it just really comes with having seen vintage fabrics, and you just know it when you see it.
I know that some vintage fabrics don't necessarily age super well, especially if they're exposed to sun. So do you have any tips for the best ways to store fabrics?
It definitely is more difficult. And, you know, I do a lot of vintage restorations, and particularly like the silks just end up with little holes through them all. And some of the dyes, just the different colors, don't work out so well as others. And it can be quite sad to see your vintage fabrics fall apart. But in storing the ones that I have, I keep them out of the light. I like to clean them when I get them, so I will wash them and then put them into storage so that anything that might be there that is chemicalized or causing more deterioration is hopefully gone by pre-washing, and then just storing it out of the light. I fold mine up. I like to see my fabrics, so I do like to put them out where I can see them all, but definitely out of light. And if you live in a very humid place, you do have to think about mold, things like that. But probably the main ones is the sunlight is the real big one.
Those are great tips. Thank you. So I think we are going to jump over to refashioning, because we touched on this briefly earlier, but we definitely want to dive into that topic a little bit with you, because you are so prolific at refashioning thrift store pieces. So my first question for you is, what do you love so much about refashioning? Why is it that you love spending time on that?
Yeah, I really love refashioning for its sustainability factor, really. It is one of the best ways that we can be sustainable in our fashion and our sewing is by using things that already exist. And one of the reasons I use only thrift store fabrics these days and refashion is reusing those pieces that would have otherwise gone to landfill. There is so much that we can create from these, you know, I sort of say a little bit daggy thrift store items that we find. There's so much that we can do. All you need is a little creativity and a little bit of sewing skills. You can create so much wonderful things from a little bit daggy thrift store clothes.
We don't have that term here in Canada. What does that mean?
Oh, a little bit daggy. That's funny. Let me think how best to describe it. Old-fashioned, not so pretty,
Rumpy?
Bit scruffy looking. Yes, all of the above.
Okay.
Oh, that's
okay.
Hilarious.
That's awesome. It's like you have a vision for things beyond like maybe what you might see in a thrift store, you know?
Absolutely. That is the key in refashioning, is having that vision ahead of time, being able to see something and seeing what it can be, not what it is now.
That's awesome.
Is that a skill that you feel like you've built up over time? Because I've heard some people say, oh, it's really hard for me to visualize beyond the pattern envelope or visualize beyond the garment in the store. Do you feel like that takes practice, or was it something that came naturally to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is something that I have developed over time. I think it definitely comes naturally for me. But that is where I, you know, and that's something I talk to, you know, people a lot about, is that that's the hard part about refashioning is it's not following an instruction manual like it is when you follow a pattern. You have to, it requires a lot of critical thinking that you can only work with what you've got there. So you really have to problem solve and be able to, you know, have the vision in your head and then think, how are you going to achieve that with what you've got on hand and, you know, what that garment is. So it does require a lot of different thinking than just following a pattern does. And it can be really hard. Some people don't, you know, have as much vision, but it is something that you develop over time, definitely. The more that you look at designs and, you know, for me, you know, the vintage styles that you want to create, it's more ingrained in your mind, those styles. And then eventually you start, you know, seeing them, and you'll start seeing those little elements. Maybe it's the collar of that jacket or that dress, the basic shape, but you can see if you just change this and this and this, it turns it into that, you know, 1930s dress that you saw on Pinterest the other day.
Yeah. And I'm certain that surrounding yourself with people who are also refashioning, maybe if our listeners out there are thinking of doing that, if they follow you and check out some of your YouTube videos, they'll get inspired by that. And maybe that will help them to develop those creative muscles a little bit more. But you do really do it so well. And I'm curious if you have a particular refashion that is maybe your favorite or most memorable that comes to mind.
My most memorable, I would actually say one of, not one I have done for myself, but something I refashioned for a client. There's probably two. So I've had two ladies bring me their wedding dresses to refashion, both for their 10-year wedding anniversaries, which by coincidence are both the same. And they were each very different, but so beautiful. One of them had this lovely beaded gown that had stains. It was quite damaged. But what we were able to do, she really loved the lace and the beadwork on there, is we're able to save bits of that and create. I used it for the bodice of a sort of 1950s style cocktail dress. So we had the white top, there was a navy skirt, 50s style. It was just beautiful. She couldn't believe that I was able to save the lace and get the bodice pieces out of what was there, because it really was puzzle making to sort of avoid all the seams. And then of course there's different seams in the dress everywhere to try and work with those. So that was just delightful. And the other one, she actually had an electric blue bridal gown, and she had it made for her in the UK. That's where she was at the time. And so we just modernized it a little bit, made it a little bit shorter, made a few tweaks here and there, and just recreated it. And she wore that to her 10-year wedding anniversary as well. And they just were like, it was so special to be able to do that for them, because they really, really just, you know, you could see how much they loved their dress, and they loved that it now is something that they can wear again for a special occasion. And they will wear it on top of that again, because it's no longer a wedding dress anymore for them. It's a cocktail dress now, and they can continue wearing it. And they just, it brought them so much joy, and that really brought me so much joy to see that.
Aw, that is so nice. Is there somewhere where we could point our listeners to have a look at those garments?
Unfortunately, no. They were for clients I did a little while ago, before I sort of started really cataloging and filming anything like that. So unfortunately, not those ones.
We'll have to use our imagination.
Yes, yes.
So back to sort of collecting things, because I just am imagining you live in this wonderful home filled with vintage fabrics and patterns and garments lining the walls. So
that's a fair description.
Perfect. I'm curious about your collection of vintage pieces, and what does that look like? Do you have a lot of really special vintage garments that you sort of just use as reference, or do you also collect thrift store pieces that you want to refashion? How do you sort of go about that collection?
Yes, I have lots and lots of pieces I found in the past few years from the thrift store that are waiting for refashioning. They sit there and taunt me constantly for more time to refashion them all. And my vintage collection, I always wish was more. But, you know, there is only so much space and so much time and funds to buy beautiful vintage pieces with. And of course, as I love even more the 20s and 30s these days, you go back in time, there's less and less, and those garments are harder to find and more expensive as well. So getting real vintage pieces from those sorts of times does get harder and more costly. So I always will be collecting vintage pieces. I just love to even look at them and touch them and love them for reference as well, even if I don't get to wear them. But I have many, many thrift store items waiting for refashioning. Too many, in fact, probably.
And when you're looking for things in a thrift store or a vintage shop, is there a process that you go through when you're evaluating the item to decide if it's worth purchasing?
Definitely. There is sort of a set of criteria, and it is something that I sort of teach in my students that, you know, you sort of go through. You need, the first thing that usually draws me in is the fabric, for one thing. Most modern things are polyester and just general kind of garbage. So we pull those aside, and that's 99% of what you know, I see as well. A lot of people think that I must have different thrift stores than them because that's all they see. But that's 99% of what is in our thrift stores here and what I see. So generally, I always look for natural fibers is the first thing. And you can spot those a mile away these days because they're so few and far between in the racks of all the polyester. So it's fairly easy to find those. And then it's really a case of I really particularly like, I guess they're starting to be called, classified as vintage items from the 80s and 90s. For me, I would call that sort of, that falls into my retro category, what I describe. But from the 80s and 90s, because the shapes are still quite large. The skirts are long. The waists are where they should be. There's a lot of fabric still in things. They're well made still. They use good quality fabrics. And I find those the best for refashioning because there's a lot of the structure and style already there to be able to tailor down from there. And things like the, like with the patterns, finding the hard parts that are already there. So maybe it's all of the collar that is already there and all of that detail, and you just need to sort of maybe take it in and shape it around a little bit. The easy things to take in and do. Starting with the fabric is definitely the big one, and then critiquing the style. Does it fit the bill of the decades and the eras that you're trying to recreate?
And is it more exciting for you when you find something that fits you already so you can just wear it out of the box, or when you find something that's perfect for a refashion?
Absolutely. It's always good to find something that fits perfectly right now because it means I don't have to do any work to get it in my wardrobe.
I mean, you seem to enjoy the work, so.
Yes, it is both. I love finding things that I can wear right now that fit because, again, that's less work, but it's great when you find something that is just fantastic and you know is going to refashion into something fabulous. That is, you know, that's those moments that you have when you're sitting there, like smiling all the way to the checkout at the thrift store, waiting to get home to, you know, put it back on the rack so it can sit there and taunt you whilst you find more time to do more refashioning.
That's awesome. You also did a video recently where you were looking at a vintage nightgown. And this was the first time I heard you use the term garment archaeology. You mentioned that you coined that term. And I just loved this video so much. You really dove into the details of this garment. And so I would love to chat a little bit about that. So to start us off, can you just tell our listeners what you mean by garment archaeology?
Yes, this one is really interesting. So garment archaeology is something that I come up with was I had a friend of mine here and we're looking at her vintage pieces, going through them and investigating underneath. I was, you know, doing some restoration work for her and, you know, we're talking about going through and I was like, look at this inside, and pointing out all these things that were different and, you know, sort of talking about it. Telling her it's like going through an archaeological dig, you know, finding all these little fun facts about the garment underneath, and there come up garment archaeology. It is, you know, when I have a lot of vintage pieces myself and have in the past have done a lot of work, vintage restoration work for vintage dealers and my friends here. And I find that looking inside these vintage pieces, you know, say 1950s and earlier, you almost always find just these little hidden stories inside a garment. They have lived many different lives. You'll find a few different colors of threads in there sometimes to telltale the amount of mends that are there through different colored threads. Sometimes I found entirely different changed necklines entirely. Once you start looking inside, it's always not immediately visible what's happened, but when you look inside, you really start to notice there's folded bits in strange places and you think, why is that there? And start looking further and looking at the stitching, looking at the thread colors, looking at where different cut marks are, because some, you might find some seams are cut and the others are pinking sheared. So you think, why are they different? And it just then starts a chain of thought to look at this inside more carefully. And you really find that it's probably had many different lives before you and might have looked very different originally than it does now. And I find that so, so fascinating. And it makes me think what people might think of, you know, mine and other ladies' refashions garments in 10, 20, 50 years' time when they're looking through our garments and then sort of doing their own garment archaeology on our garments. I think it is just so fascinating. And I love that having our clothes that tell such a story, that are made with enough love that they're cared for so long as well.
We absolutely love this idea as well. The idea of thinking of people kind of looking at our garments 20, 30, 40 years from now and sort of envisioning what we are like. Helen's making a face for him, cringing so hard. imagining what kind of a sewist we are. But I'm curious, what do you hope people in the future will notice when they look at your garments?
Oh, what will they? I would like to think that it would look like that they were made well. Very neat and tidy, and that they were really loved, I guess, would be what I would hope, because that's what I put into my garments. So I guess that's what I hope other people would see when they look at them.
Oh, that's a really lovely sentiment. I love that. So what are some interesting or maybe odd things that you have learned from looking closer at vintage pieces? Can you think of any specific examples for us?
I think looking inside garments, not so much odd, but really is how I developed my understanding of how to put garments together myself. It really gives you that understanding of garment construction and garment construction of vintage pieces, because they are put together a little bit more differently. And you can discover that a lot of things are actually hand done to finish off. The finishes are hand done, and it's just the best way to do it because it's not only sometimes easier, but looks far better as well. So seeing that in the originals makes you realize that that's what you should be doing with your own to get that same sort of look.
And do you think that looking closely at vintage clothing has really made you a better sewist over the years?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's 100% by looking inside vintage garments and seeing how they're constructed and seeing the level of effort that they have gone into to do beautiful French seams, to do all of these intricate little details that we just do not have. You know, you would be hard pressed to find a beautiful dress that has pin tucks and embroidery and these strange little darts that fit in just the right places here and there to make it fit properly. It's all the little details in vintage dresses that it comes back to the effort, because they're more loved, that they went to the effort, and that's why they're still beautiful now and still cherished, whereas modern garments don't have that much thought or effort or kindness put into them. They're made to be usually more to a price point. And so all of those little details get, wiped out entirely.
Yeah, it's so true. And one of the nice things about looking at vintage pieces is you don't have to buy them or own them to go and appreciate and learn from them. You can just do that in the store, obviously respectfully. You're not cutting up, open the lining to look inside. But you can learn a lot just from looking in a vintage shop as well. So I encourage our listeners to go do that too.
Absolutely. And I think it's actually easier to understand how a vintage garment has gone together because it is more in the realm of put together individually, piece by piece, just like you would be at home. Whereas, a modern garment might be harder to actually understand how they've put it together because it's made in such a way that it's on a production line. It's done seam by seam from different people and it's really hard to replicate sometimes, whereas vintage garments are put together by usually, you know, the one person all together, and it's made in a way just like you would at home still. So it's actually easier to understand how it's gone together and be able to replicate that yourself.
Well, it's all very interesting, and we appreciate so much that you share it on your YouTube channel, because it's great to see in person somebody else dissect these garments and work with these garments and show them off. So we'd love to hear a bit more about your channel, and maybe you can start us off by just telling our listeners what you do over on your YouTube channel, mm-hmm. where they can find it, and the kind of content that you're producing there.
Yes, my YouTube channel is Evelyn Wood TV. You can find it by, I think, typing Evelyn Wood into the search bar. I do everything sewing, vintage, and fashion, and testing. I do lots of different things to see what works. Garment archaeology was the first one that I did, for example, and it was very, very popular. So I think I'll be doing more of those. I like experimenting with odd topics like that, because it's not necessarily something that you would ever go looking for. Like, you don't know that you were interested in looking inside vintage garments, and that it makes you really make you a better sewer by thinking about what's inside your garments. So it's a different topic like that. So I do, you know, thrifting to show people what you can find at thrift stores to be more sustainable in fashion. We talk a lot about sustainable sewing and fashion and keeping. That is definitely one of my points there. And I talk sewing habits and how to be a better sewer in general, along with fun little things like garment archaeology and refashion projects. And I really like to go through my more than not really tutorial, but more follow along with me in my thought process, in what I'm thinking and sort of how I'm creating these garments is what I like to do on my YouTube channel, because I think it's something that is harder to find the and learn is sort of the what is the thought process that makes you to get to that end result.
Yeah, and that's the thing that people can learn the most from. There's plenty of people out there sharing outfits of the day or looks and things like that, but to actually take people behind the scenes and talk about your thought process and making and refashioning and buying vintage pieces is so valuable.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That's the hard part. And I think that's where I like to take my audience along with me, in that, you know, they're there in the sewing room with me while I'm doing my refashion step by step. For me, that's the most fun.
So do you have a schedule that you try to stick to when it comes to producing YouTube videos?
I would like to say absolutely, but it is very hard for me to get myself on a regular schedule. I'm trying once a week. I'm trying for a certain day, but it hasn't worked out quite that well so far, but I will get there. But generally, I do a video a week, most weeks.
And what are your favorite types of videos to make?
That's a tough one. I love my thrift to vintage videos, because it is really like having, you know, my audience there with me in the sewing room as I'm creating, you know, a refashion. And, you know, that's always actually fun to do by itself. And then on top of having them in there with me. But I also love my videos like when I did about mistakes are part of the process. That was really fun to make. And I think a very important video as well, because, you know, a lot of beginners don't realize they really need that kind of, like, that's what they need to hear. And you look at the comments on that video and it's just full of people saying, thank you for this type of, you know, this video. It's just the message I needed to hear. And that, you know, sort of just talking about sewing and what it is, and that making mistakes is part of the process. It's not wrong. It's, you didn't do it wrong. You didn't, you know, it's, there is no right or wrong. I still have to pick up the unpick all of the time. I don't even give it a second thought, you know, that I have to undo something and just redo it. And then neither should you. It's just how it goes. It's part of it. Don't sweat it. You know, things like that, I think, are for me really important and fun to make, because I know that it's hitting the right people just when they need to hear it before they give up sewing forever.
Oh, yeah. And I love that you have videos for kind of all different skill levels, and the fact that you're a teacher really comes through in your videos as well. You have a series called Learn to Speak Dressmaker that is very beginner friendly. I think it's a great place to start if there are any beginner sewers listening that want to get into your channel. You have some really awesome sewing terms that you cover in this series. Can you give us some examples?
Yes, that was that's something again that I think is so important. They haven't been my, say, most viewed videos, but I think are some of the most important that you need to know when learning to sew. Things like the bias and the grain line, like these are crucial things that you need to understand. Again, when we're talking about being able to pick up a pattern envelope and learn how to sew, they don't really explain those types of things in there. And that's why that series is really important to me. And when you look at the comments on there, it makes me so happy to see that so many people really got so much value out of that. And it really sort of started putting the pieces together, and they started then understanding what they were doing wrong or why garments are cut on grain line, etc. And for me, I'm always about trying to give people the understanding of dressmaking so that they can problem solve and think for themselves in the future, not just copy something, you know, step by step, but have the understanding so they can really go on and know what they're doing. And there are, I will have to continue that series because there are so many other terms, as I'm sure that you ladies know, that it's like almost endless learning another language when you learn sewing. So I'll have to continue that one, I think.
It is such a great series. Another one that we love, or a video that we love from you, is the one that you did recently called 5 Sewing Habits You Need. And we thought it would be fun to go through those 5 habits here on the show so that our listeners can get filled in on that.
Yes, that has been my most popular video by far. It's sort of my quote-unquote viral video, which is quite funny that it's just on sewing habits. But I guess that's a really important message and something that people see and what they're drawn to looking at. So I'm not sure if I can remember each of the 5. It's been a while since I have actually watched that video. I don't know if you have them listed there.
I do.
Great.
So the first one that you mentioned is take your foot off the foot pedal when you are not sewing.
So I would ask everybody to go and read the comments from that video, because you'll see about 100 people that have said, I take my foot off the pedal because I learned the hard way and it really hurt when I had the needle through my finger. So please, absolutely everybody, for safety reasons, take your foot. The habit is to, whenever you not sewing, changing the needle, doing any, putting your hands anywhere near the machine, is to actually lift your foot off the pedal and put it down beside, because there are so many people that have sewn over their finger and it makes me cringe every time I think about it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. Me too. It sends me shiver down my spine when I think about it. And I would say that that mistake only happens once, but then we had a guest on the show, Susie Fuhrer, recently that said that she's done that twice in her life.
Oh no, so, twice. Oh, yes, I would have to agree with you. You'd think that you'd only do that once, but twice.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, so the next one on your list is to keep all cut pieces right side up or wrong side up. And this was a tip that I had never heard before, and I think it's genius. So can you explain that one too?
Yes, I think this habit, I think, only rings with more experienced sewers. Beginner sewers, I don't think, quite understand what I mean by this so far. So once you do sew for a little bit, like you said, I think you just immediately, aha. So you can obviously mark all of your right and wrong sides, which you should do. When you get to a point where you don't really have to mark them as much, I make sure that I keep all of my pieces, like when I set them down anywhere, that they are right side up. So every time I look at a pattern piece or a cut garment piece, I should say, I know that it is sitting right side up on the table. So I always know which is the right and wrong side without having to go to the extra extent of marking them. And then maybe the chalk rubs off. It just becomes, when it becomes habit like that, it just makes your workflow so much smoother and easier when you know that you always will put your pieces right side up. So you just pick it up and just go straight, you know, sandwich those together, and you can do right sides together really easily without spending, you know, a few minutes here and there every seam thinking, do I have the right, wrong sides? Which ones?
It's so smart. And we talk a lot on the show about efficiency and people just not having enough time to sew and making the most of your time in the sewing room. And I think little habits like that really are going to change the game in terms of your sewing practice. If you get into that habit, it really is going to save time. So I absolutely love that tip. The next one on your list is trim and press as you go.
Yes, definitely. This is so key. You need to, yes, trim all your little tails off, neaten it up, and press every seam after you sew it. It is critical that when you go to sew the next seam, if those previous seams are already pressed open and flat, you don't have to worry about knowing which way they should be folding because they're already pressed flat. When you get to the end and you've then you almost don't need to press it anymore because you've been pressing it along the way. It makes everything so much smoother. It makes it easier and it makes it neater as well when you do that. And it's easier to get into the habit of doing it. And then you just don't think about it. You don't think, oh, it's going to take so much more time. I'll just skip that pressing now. If you just make it part of your work habit, you don't even think about it and you just do it. And it doesn't cause you stress thinking of deciding to do it or not. You just do it. Just make it a habit.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think as a beginner too, a lot of people might think like, oh, it's such a hassle to go over to the ironing board and maybe my iron timed out, so I have to wait for it to heat up again. And, you know, it can seem like a little bit of a pain, but it makes such a big difference for the look of the garment in the end. When you're pressing as you go, it just gives such a professional look. And I think it really sets you apart from being, you know, just a hobby sewist, you know, to somebody who's really creating garments that don't look homemade, you know?
I agree that pressing is one of the key things to make your garments look more professional.
Absolutely. Okay. And then the next one is always leave your bobbin in the machine.
Yes. So for me, I've never not have done this, but I hear stories of people when they'll take them out and then they'll start sewing and there's no bobbin in there. And of course it causes all sorts of trouble and because they don't realize that there's no bobbin in the machine. So even if I finish a project, I would never leave my machine with no bobbin in there. Or I would, if I did for some reason, I would open the case and have it all open so I knew that there was no bobbin in there. So you don't just start sewing next time and either, you know, get into a whole tangled, you know, mess, or you sew half of the seam before you realize that nothing has sewn.
Yeah, that's always the most brutal when
we've all done that. Yes.
Yeah.
Get halfway around and then you realize, oh no, there's no stitching in that whole thing. And all your pins have disappeared, of course, as well at that stage. Then you have to repin it all and then, oh yes, disaster.
I always just remind myself, no stitches is better than wrong stitches. So at least yes. I don't have to unpick anything.
That's true.
Very true. Very true.
All right. Your last tip, very important tip, is machine maintenance.
Yes, absolutely. I regularly try and remind my viewers of this, and that is to clean. Cleaning, absolutely. It's, you know, and every mechanic I ever see that comes, I always like to quiz them on different things that I can do to my machines. Every single time, without you know, they say keep machine fluff free. And whenever you have issues with your machine, you know, a lot of the time it can be traced back to having a lot of fluff. It's amazing, especially when you sew a lot. The amount of fluff that gets under those machines, particularly in the bobbin areas, is just, it's so much. And it will make your sewing so much smoother when you regularly clean that out. You will run into far less problems.
Awesome. We love all of these tips. Thank you so much for sharing them on the show. And I do encourage our listeners to go and check out your YouTube channel and all of the videos that you have up there. You have so much great information there. So we will link that in the show notes. We've been talking for a while now, but I do want to touch on your teaching and your vintage sewing school real quick. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your vintage sewing school?
Yes, Vintage Sewing School is what I am building at the moment. It is already there and it is where I'm taking everything I do offline in teaching, sewing and refashioning and putting it online to the world because, you know, no one wants to have to come to a sewing class at 8 a.m. on a Saturday morning. You know, I find I'd like to pick up sewing at 10 p.m. on a Tuesday. So being online is far more accessible to everyone. And it's really what I want to do in taking my business forward is building out Vintage Sewing School. So it is where I enjoy the most, and it's where I break everything down step by step, really slowly in, you know, video form, and have all the, you know, head over shots to really show you what I'm doing and give you all the techniques and the things that I'm thinking about to really recreate those looks. I've have a latest refashion workshop there, which has been quite successful so far. A lot of people have gone through and have just been loving it. And I love seeing that, you know, I've been able to break down a refashion and, you know, teach it in a way that everybody can pick up a men's shirt and be able to refashion it. You know, I do all of the hard work in figuring out all the little details and how to do it, what measurements to do, what it should fit like before you start with figuring out all of that stuff, and have it step by step so people can really get in and start refashioning. Because like we were discussing before, that can really be the hard part in like figuring out where do you start? What do you do? I find most people, particularly with refashioning, get sort of the first cut jitters, you know, where you sit there with the scissors and like get scared and you go to cut and then stop and then go to cut again and all rethink yourself because you're just like, it's scary having to cut into a real garment. Even people that sew a lot, you know, quite experienced dressmakers come to refashioning and dealing with ready-made garments. They just get stuck. They don't know where to start. And so that's where Vintage Sewing School really comes in with my refashioning workshops, is doing all that hard stuff. I'm so excited about it because it's really where, you know, I get to teach people. That's what I love doing the most. And that's where I get to put it online. So yeah.
Oh, that is so awesome. So that's all on the Vintage Sewing School website, but you also do in-person classes and workshops as well, right?
Yes, this year it's something that I have expanded into and it has been so great.
That's awesome. So do you have anything coming up that you can maybe plug on the show, or where are you teaching these workshops?
Yes, currently I have been teaching them in my hometown here in Brisbane, Australia. Beautiful sewing studio at Sewing Adventures here. We have we've done a few men's shirts refashioning weekends, and it has been so wonderful. I love meeting all the women that come along to these classes and really getting to sew with them and really help them, you know, refashion and get an understanding of how to do it in their style. It's something that you can only get with being in person. And we are about to book in some more workshops, actually. I think they will be coming up in August. And there is a possibility of us doing a mending shorter workshop as well that we're working on as we speak.
Oh, that's amazing. And we love your Monday Mending series on Instagram. So I imagine your mending workshop is going to be wonderful as well.
Thank you. I hope so. It's a skill that I think we need to bring back into modern practice.
Absolutely. So if any of our listeners want to sign up for one of your workshops or get on a list to kind of hear more about it, where can they do that?
Yes, you can go to evelynwood.com.au, and that's my website, or you can go straight to vintagesewingschool.com and see all of my online programs there.
Awesome.
And if they want to follow you on Instagram and YouTube, it's at Evelyn Wood.
Yes, Instagram is Evelyn_Wood, and YouTube is Evelyn Wood TV. I think if you just type it in the search bar, you should find some of my videos to be able to find me there.
That is awesome. And of course, we will link everything in the show notes. Evelyn, it was such a pleasure talking to you today. I think you completely light up when you talk about vintage sewing. It's just kind of radiating through the microphone. So we've really, really loved chatting with you all about that today. And I know our listeners are going to love this episode. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. That's so nice. It has been an absolute pleasure to be here with you guys chatting, and so wonderful. I thank you so much for having me on here. You guys just promote sewing and the community is just wonderful. Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
That's awesome. Well, you take care.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Da-da.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca.
Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please, 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 please leave us a review. It really helps other sewists like yourself to discover us.
We really love reading your reviews because they boost our self-esteem.
Oh, yeah, they do.
We're recording today in sunny but kind of muggy Vancouver, Canada. And you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
It's daggy. It's daggy out.
Oh, it's daggy out. Yeah.
That's probably not how you use it.
We tried.
If you're loving the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon, contribute $5 or more a month, and you get access to our bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Our show is produced by the very hardworking Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye. Don't to first. Did I say don't to forget?